Welcome back. Everybody had a good weekend. Just one announcement before we dive in. As promised on Friday, Homework One was posted. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, do so early. It's going to be due this Friday before the start of class. Upload it to Canvas as a single PDF file. And so, given the situation, we're going to have to be a little bit creative in how you coordinate and talk to each other and other things. This is in graduate class, the homeworks can be difficult and can require some significant thought. They are typically not a lot of problems or a lot of work in the end, but they may require some thought, some discussion. Typically, I highly encourage people to work together, form study groups, sit and talk. Those sorts of things are harder to do during the pandemic. So Slack as a resource to chat with each other. And anything else I can do to help facilitate that for you all, let me know. This first one, largely circuits two review and one problem on diode reverse recovery. Not too bad, one of the longer assignments of the year. But as we move forward, things will be not just regurgitate content from the lecture, but start applying this towards design. We talk about a loss mechanism in class. How do you design a converter to minimize that? So the things that'll take some time. So make sure to start early and early on in the semester, establish methods to communicate with your peers so you can be talking and saying, how did you approach this? What did you do? Work together. It's an important part of the learning process. Questions on that? On anything before we dive in? Okay. So where were we? We have been looking at this baseline design from TI of a 12 volt, 48 volt boost converter. And last class kind of talked about diode reverse recovery being the limiting factor in the original design. Reverse recovery occurred because this is a minority carrier device. This PN diode means when it's on, it's got good conduction characteristics due to minority carriers being stored within the device. To get it to shut off rapidly, we have to rip out all those minority stored charges. That process, when it's done by switching on a FET and applying a big voltage across the pair of them, results in additional loss. Because we essentially have a short until we can remove all those charges and get the diode to actually turn off. Okay. So we kind of generalized that and talked about minority carrier devices versus majority carrier in the case of transistors. The go-to examples are a MOSFET versus an IGBT for power applications. In terms of diodes, it's a PN diode versus a Schottky diode. Okay. High frequency, high efficiency applications more often than not we're here unless we go to very high voltages, very high powers. Good thing about MOSFET is it's a majority carrier device, so we don't have this minority storage charge. Bad thing is there are then some physical limitations to how we can create it. It's conducting through majority carriers, which are dependent on doping density. There's an inherent trade-off between the on resistance and the blocking voltage of this device. Okay. IGBTs, we get the conductivity modulation that allows us to have a higher voltage device with reasonable conduction characteristics, but minority stored charge, so it's going to have higher switching loss, just going to constrain designs to lower switching frequency for reasonable efficiency. Okay. So then we saw, okay, if this minority stored charge is our big limitation, let's replace the diode with a Schottky diode. Well, when we simulate that, we get about 2% increase in efficiency by getting rid of that reverse recovery loss. Expected a little bit more than 2%. So we went in and looked at the switching waveforms, saw that they were definitely significantly improved from the PN diode, but there still was some switching energy, still some much smaller, but still significant current spikes going on at the MOSFET turn on. The resulting energy at turn on was relatively small. 0.1% of our power was switching loss during the MOSFET turn on. But then we went over and looked at turn off. Even though there's no spike, no current overshoot, the waveforms look pretty benign. When we look closely, voltage does not rise instantaneously. It takes some time. And in these waveforms, the current through the MOSFET does not really start falling until after the voltage has risen all the way up to 48 volts, the output voltage. The result is now we have some switching energy here at the turn-off transition that's about 5 times as large, about 0.5% of our output power. And then we ended here saying, okay, let's look in a little bit more detail about how a MOSFET switches. We'll do that over the next couple of slides. This one, to begin, is looking at just static behaviors of the MOSFET, and then we'll look at dynamic behaviors on the next slide. So here we're looking at the static transfer curves, ID versus VDS, taken from the data sheet of the MOSFET we're using in this application. Then another plot sometimes on the data sheet, ID versus RDS on, the curves of varying VGS on both. Okay. On the left here, I'm cheating a bit. I deleted the y-axis labels. It's a 10 milliohm device, so this label goes up to about 200 amps. And I'm gonna talk about it in a reference to our application that goes 0 to 4 amps. So I just deleted that, otherwise I'd have to draw everything down in this bottom 1% of the plot. So I'm just gonna kind of lie to you here and say this is 10 amps, put 5 amps about here. So we can sketch out a little bit what our MOSFET switching waveforms look like here, going between 0 and 4 amps, plus or minus an amp of ripple. Okay. So looking at this left plot in VDS versus ID curves of VGS, going back to our introductory microelectronics course, say, okay, for a MOSFET, it's got 3 regions of operation. And there would be some curve here dividing, called triode, over here. Over here, we're operating an active set. And then down here, we're in cutoff. VGS below a threshold. And first question is, if we're employing this device in a switching converter, where do we want to operate on this plot? Active set? Agreement, disagreement? Disagreement? Why is that?
Because that active set has higher power loss than triode.
So active set is explicitly what we want to stay out of. So if you're back in the microelectronics course, everything's an active set. It's where the thing behaves as a nice amplifier. You put a bias current through it, and a small change in VDS will give you a big change in VDS. You get a good amplifier out of it. For power electronics, we want to stay the heck away from active set, because active set has high drain to source voltage and high drain to source current. Means high instantaneous power loss. Okay. So in power electronics, when we're using this thing in a switch converter, we want to be either, I'm going to kind of break this axis here, somewhere out here with a high blocking voltage but zero current. This is our kind of off state. Or somewhere here, up and down this axis, which is the closest thing we can get to a short. Power electronics, we want switch mode devices. We want them to be close to either an open or a short and nothing else. Right? So that off state is cut off. Keep the gate to source voltage low enough and you have zero current flowing through it. Pretty good open. The on state, drive to the maximum VGS. Hope that we're not putting so much current through it that it goes into saturation. And we're just trying to get the best approximation of a short that we can. On this plot, the vertical axis of IDS and a horizontal axis of DDS means the slope of this line is 1 over RDS on. We frame the source resistance of the device, so we want this line as steep as we can get it. I mean, we have the smallest drain to source resistance possible. Okay. So that means we want to either be on this curve or down here in cutoff, but we want to stay the heck out of this region. This is our high loss region. We have high voltage and high current. And at the moment where we're considering just the static characteristics, not considering any dynamics, no inductance or capacitance, instantaneous power means power loss. There's no energy storage in this curve. Right? It's just a bet. Okay. So that's what we want out of this. Then, obviously, if this thing's working at all, we're doing that to some degree. Okay? During the majority of the interval where the MOSFET is off, we're down here in cutoff. During the majority of the interval where the MOSFET is on, we're up here in deep triode. But the question is, what happens when we switch the device? Ideally, what we would want is, let's say the MOSFET is off. I want to get from this point up to this on point without going through any of this high loss region. What I'd like to do is kind of come down, drop the voltage down to zero, get the thing fully on with the high VGS, and go up to my on state. I'd like to drop the voltage and increase the current. And then when going from conducting to off, I'd like to kind of go the opposite direction. Drop the current first, then increase the voltage, so that I never enter this high loss region. That would be good. What do we do? Not that. Okay. Looking at my FET turn off, switch node voltage is the drain to source voltage on the FET. Blue curve at the top is the drain to source current. What happens? The current stays nearly at its maximum value during the whole time the voltage rises. The other transition, we get some additional overshoot. They're kind of both changing at the same time, but definitely the current reaches a peak well before the voltage drops much. So it means in both of these transitions, we are traversing this high loss region. They look more like this. This way and back as we're switching. Means that in all really of these fundamental converters looked at in 481 said a switch mode power supplies are good because all they have are inductors and capacitors, which are energy storage elements, which are ideally lossless, and FETs behaving as ideal switches close to them. They have some resistance, but they just switch on and off. Means even to the extent that that's true, we've got additional losses in the process of turning them on and off. Okay? Even if we say R on is zero, okay, push this all the way over here. Still, as I switch between these points, I'll incur losses, even if I have an ideal switch to the extent that I can build it out of a transistor device. Okay. So, part of what we'll look at in this class is how do we take this green trajectory and make it look more like the purple one? And we alter the behavior of the converter, change switching patterns, change design, add some auxiliary circuits so that instead of going through this high loss region, we have a switching curve that looks like this purple one. Okay. Make sure there is never instantaneous voltage and current at the same time on this device. Get the switching losses down. Make sense? Okay. So that's all static behaviors. Assuming the MOSFET is nothing but this IDVDS curve, which are measured if I wanted to go and get these curves for a tested device, I'd just go point by point, put it in steady state at all these operating points. We include dynamics, things will be a little bit different. We have to look at what is the inherent energy storage associated with a switching device. So here, I'm taking a MOSFET, just expanding it. So this circuit diagram is just the MOSFET itself. I'm just pulling out and saying, okay, this would be our static model of a MOSFET. Some transistor IBVDS curves, or maybe we simplify it and just model it as an R-on still. But inherently, in the creation of a physical transistor like that, I'm going to get these parasitic capacitances, and I'll end up with a body diode. Hop back and draw it explicitly, but my MOSFET here has a PN diode here between this key source well, this N-type drift region. PN, that's a diode. That diode is effectively between the source and the drain. It's always there, parasitic in some sense, but it's fundamental to the structure of this thing. Got that diode and a traditional transistor. If I'm not careful about turning that on, I can get reverse recovery out of this thing and have that loss show back up. Majority of the time, that can be solved by being a little bit more careful with your gate drive waveforms, as long as you have the FET on when that diode would have turned on and your currents aren't massive. The majority of the current will go through the FET itself and you won't forward bias that diode. So could get reverse recovery there if you allow the body diode to turn on, but that one's usually solved by saying, okay, adjust your gate to source waveforms to make sure the FET is on when the diode wants to be on. Okay. So then I end up with these different capacitances, CGS, CGD, and CDS for a three-terminal device, capacitance between every pair of terminals. And pulling from a data sheet for those capacitances, as well as this gate charge, has to do with the CGS and CGD, what the gate actually sees when it's turning it on. I get these kind of curves. Things to notice, one, all three of these capacitances, well, as they're traditionally reported on a data sheet, we get three different capacitances, CISS, COSS, and CRSS. CRSS is CGD. COSS is CDS plus CGD, and CISS is CGS plus CGD. Commonly a result of just how these things are measured. So if I want to measure CDS, short the gate and source together, and measure between drain and source what the capacitance is, but shorting the gate and source together shorts CGD in parallel with CDS. So they're listed in this way just because that's how they measure them. Okay. Generally true that CGS, CGS, much greater than CDS, much greater than CGD. See, there's enough separation and I'm on a log scale here. Since CGD is so much smaller than CDS, COSS is approximately just CDS. CISS is approximately just CGS. To make that approximation, these two that have CGD added, CGD is a couple of orders of magnitude smaller. Normally just neglect that that's added in there. So what kind of things can you notice? Capacitances are nonlinear. We have a plot here which is showing me the value of the capacitance. And that value is changing by, in some cases, more than an order of magnitude as the voltage on it changes. And then your capacitance, just C, doesn't change with voltage. Here, these devices, their capacitance changes with voltage. We need a way to deal with that. We'll dive into that in more detail in the coming lectures, how to handle that and where that comes from. For the moment, we'll just note it and then assume we can treat them as linear capacitors. Yeah. The nonlinear capacitance itself is lossless. If it has leakage effects, you'd model those separately from the capacitance, right? Yeah. So just by nature of being nonlinear, won't change the fact that you can put energy into it, get all that energy back out. By nature of it being part of a FET, that's hard to do. Often other things will cause some energy loss in that process. Okay. So the nonlinearity of those three capacitances with respect to the drain to source voltage. Gate to source capacitance is also nonlinear with respect to the gate to source voltage. And it's most often given as this kind of a plot instead of a capacitance versus VGS plot. Because this is a little bit easier to apply and design. So it's giving the cumulative charge you gate that comes into the gate. I'm trying to turn this thing on and I'm supplying a gate current IG. Q gate is the integral of IG during the process of increasing the VGS voltage. Q gate is integral IG dt. I integrate up that current, I get a charge. This is telling me what that charge is going to look like over the process of raising the gate source voltage from 0 to 10 volts. A linear capacitance, Q is equal to CV. I should see just a straight line. I don't see that. I've got this stair step here, and then if you look very closely, a little bit different slope up here than down here after the stair step compared to before that stair step. So I've got some nonlinearity here as well. This curve is dictated by kind of two effects. First, kind of down here, I have is as I try to turn this thing on and I start from cutoff, for the first little bit here, I'm doing nothing but charging this gate to source capacitance. The device hasn't started switching yet because I'm still below the threshold voltage. So this is all charge going into the gate source capacitor just to try to bring the gate source voltage up high enough that the device actually starts switching. And then somewhere in here, that actually begins to switch. What happens is as this FET turns on, bringing down the drain to source voltage, changing that drain to source voltage requires charge go through CGD because its voltage is changing. This little plateau here, it's called a Miller plateau, is a bunch of charge going into the gate to drain capacitance. Even though that's a very small capacitance, I may be changing the voltage across it by a lot. They take gate to source voltage from, in our design, 0 to 10, but the drain to source voltage goes from 48 down to 0 as a much larger voltage swing. Okay. This plateau is going to occur at the time that the drain to source voltage is changing. After I make it through the plateau, the rest of this is all just more gate to source charge. It's just bringing the gate to source voltage up. The device is switched on at this point, and I'm just dropping the resistance of it. Bottom left, just showing as an example, diode, whether Schottky or PN diode, will also have a nonlinear capacitance akin to the drain to source capacitance of the FET. From an identical mechanism, but it'll also be nonlinear, decreasing in magnitude as voltage goes up. This would just be for some example diode, anode to cathode capacitance. We'll call it just CD. Okay, so now I've got all these dynamic effects that are going to be happening really at the same time as anything we discussed here. This all had to do with just the static curves and how my waveforms are going to change as I move through a switching action. These capacitances are going to limit how fast we can do any of that. As soon as we start considering the presence of these capacitances and them being non-zero, we know we're going to have non-ideal switching actions. Ideally, I'd like all my drain to source voltages to be a square wave. If I have a capacitance from drain to source, getting a square wave would require infinite current from somewhere, right? Capacitance, and I want a step function on its voltage. I need infinite current to have that voltage change that high. So it's an infinite dV/dt. So I know immediately, okay, we're never going to get those square waves. They're always going to be slew rate limited by how much current we can put into these capacitance, how fast we can switch that VDS waveform. Okay. We go back to our measured results. We can even see that kind of plug in numbers here during the FET turn off. Current stays going through the FET during the entire turn-off transition, and our switch node is almost constant slope. And that slope is approximately, neglecting a couple of effects, IL over CDS. Meaning the rate limitation, how fast we can turn off the FET and get the switch node to rise, just how much current can we pump into that CDS capacitance to get its voltage up. Further, we can go and look, and assuming we can quickly get from triode to cutoff, then to get this thing fully off, most of the problem is just charging up that capacitance, which means occasionally losing my colors here. Nope. We're going to stay green a moment. The amount of energy that I put into the FET is dominated by the energy that goes into that drain to source capacitance. Okay, so for the FET we've been using, CDS is 0.6 nanofarads times 2, because I have two of them in parallel. The two drain to source capacitances are in parallel. Is a linear capacitance, as I promised, approximating the nonlinear behavior of it. We'll talk about how to calculate that number. This means that energy stored in that capacitance between when the FET was conducting and when the FET is off, voltage on that capacitance goes from 0 to 48 volts. So I should have an energy of 1/2 times 1.2 nanofarads, C 48 volts squared, 1/2 CV squared. If I plug in and calculate that, that is 1.3 microjoules, which is the same number I found right here with some generous rounding at various points. Okay. What does that tell me? Well, this is now the majority of the energy we've been talking about. That energy during the turn-off transition is required to get the capacitance charged up so that the FET can actually be shut off. Now, question might be, well, I just said these nonlinear capacitances are still lossless, right? So you can put energy into them, you can take it back out, not lose anything. To the extent that you can with any capacitor, they all have some parasitic resistance. But the energy is not actually lost in this waveform. It's put into that capacitance, it was used to get the voltage up, and it's sitting there in that 48 volt charged capacitor. It's not left the circuit, it's still present. So why does it end up degrading my efficiency? It comes back to what happens here in the turn on transition. When I turn it off, charge the capacitance up to 48 volts, all that energy is sitting in the capacitor, then at this point, I turn on the FET. Try to make its channel into a small on resistance. That on resistance effectively just shorts out that capacitance and dissipates all its energy internal to the FET. By turning it on with a high voltage across it, just shorting that capacitance out, and the energy is actually lost in the channel of the FET here. So we don't see it here because it's all happening inside the FET. Looking at is, as I turn this FET on with the energy stored in the capacitance, I short it out and I get some current circulating in this path, but actually measuring the drain to source current, it's up here. And it won't see this internal loop dissipating the energy at that time. Externally, what we see is during turn off, the energy goes into the FET and then it never comes back out. Actually lost at this point. So we still have a chance to get it back out in theory. Right? We put it in during the turn off. If I can get it back out before I turn on the FET, I can save that energy, put it back into the circuit. Questions on that? Does that make sense at a high level? No? We'll go into more detail in all of these things in the coming lectures. Okay, just wanna kind of go through the waveforms of switching transitions here. We'll look at both the FET turn off and FET turn on transitions. We'll start with FET turn off. And a simplified version of our boost converter here. I'm gonna assume is that this MOSFET is more or less ideal. Say it has some on resistance that's not zero, but otherwise it's just a switch with an on resistance. And I'm gonna pull out and just model the effects of what happens when I have a drain to source capacitance here. This FET can switch instantly fast. When it's off, it's just an open. When it's on, it's a resistance, but it switches instantaneously between the two. So I'm gonna say, starting from this point, let's model the FET turning off. So prior to this, the FET is on. Expect to see something like, let's start with just ideal waveforms. I sub L should be rising when the FET's on and falling when the FET's off. And I'm not just drawing one switching period. I'm kind of drawing zoomed in around this switching action. Right? So the separate current will keep going into the switching period is somewhere way off to the right. And then ideally, my drain to source voltage of the FET should kind of jump up here to 48 volts, output voltage V, and stay there. This all happens instantaneously. What would happen with an ideal FET and no drain to source capacitance? If we start considering the drain to source capacitance, surely there's a way for me to change colors. Pointer options in color. Okay. What's going to happen? So everything will be the same back here in red. I'm gonna plot IDS, considering the effects of this capacitance. And VDFs. So everything will be the same during the time that the FET is on. And then at this point, I suddenly turn it off. But because of the presence of CDFs, this voltage is not going to jump instantaneously. Right? I suddenly shut this thing off.
basically just remove it from the circuit, it's an open. What I'm left with is just the inductor, the CDS capacitance, and the diode going to my output voltage, Cout.
So what happens initially? I've got this inductor and capacitor, this output capacitance, some big bulk capacitance. It's more or less just going to have a constant voltage across it, a V. Initially, right at the point where the FET turns off, VDS, let's say, let's call this time T1. Equal to 0 volts. IL is equal to, just say, small ripple approximation applies, or if we don't want to, we'll say it's IL plus delta IL. That is peak there. And what I'm left with is really an LC resonant circuit. Because this voltage is initially zero, this diode is still reverse biased. Still got 48 volts applied across it. It can't turn on until that voltage goes to zero plus its forward voltage. This voltage is not going to jump instantaneously because I now have a capacitance there. What's going to happen, the inductor current is all going to dump into that drain to source capacitance and slowly raise the drain to source voltage. So it's going to start increasing rate of IL over CDS. During that time, what happens with the current going through this device? And I'm going to sketch IDS in this case up here, including this drain to source capacitance. Okay, that current is going to keep rising. And what's the voltage across the inductor? It's VG minus whatever my voltage is here across this drain to source capacitance. And that's going to stay positive, at least initially, until the switch node voltage, VDS, gets up above the input. My inductor current is going to stay continuous. And as I continue, drain to source voltage is going to keep rising. As it does, at some point, drain to source voltage will be greater than the input. That'll cause my inductor current to kind of flip and start dropping. Looks something like this here. Okay. Then, whenever my drain to source voltage finally gets up above V, above the output voltage by some small VF of this diode, the diode will turn on, clamp things, and I'll be back to a traditional mode of operation. My voltage is clamped, and inductor current is ramping down at VG minus V over L. Okay. So this kind of stuff is happening in every single boost converter we've ever looked at during the FET turn off. Thing is, we normally neglect this under the assumption that really two things happen. Interruption. One, whatever this time is that it takes to go from shutting the FET off to turning the diode on, let's call it TR. It's much less than TS. And then however much the inductor current changes, let's call it delta IR, is much, much less than however much current the inductor is conducting. These two things are true. That's really what we looked at in EC 481, our averaging analysis and just neglecting anything that's going on during the switching transition. Okay. This time is small relative to the rest of the period, so it doesn't really distort the waveforms much. And then however much the inductor current changes during this transition is small enough that it doesn't change the dynamics of that inductor current waveform. If those two things are true, then we can kind of neglect all of this and say, just don't worry about it. Maybe it'll impact my efficiency, but I can still model the behavior of the converter without considering it. We start trying to push things going towards higher power density designs, pushing us towards higher frequency, smaller passives. We want to model efficiency very well so we can get a very high efficiency design. Then these sorts of approximations become no longer reasonable to make. They're just, if I start increasing my switching frequency, this is some small portion of the period, but if I start switching faster and faster, well, these dynamics are all dictated by what the current is, what the capacitance is, what the inductance is. I start switching faster, the other intervals, my normal DTS and D prime TS will get smaller, but these things are going to stay the same amount of time, and they'll suddenly become a significant portion of the period. This may take 10 nanoseconds. You're switching at 100 kilohertz, that's nothing. You're switching at a megahertz, that starts to matter. If you're switching at 10 megahertz, it's huge, 10% of the period. Okay. They become more significant as you push your design further and further. Okay. Then, time, let me just get through. Let's look at a turn on transition. We just did turn off. So similarly, let's say the FET turns on right here. My kind of ideal analysis in green again, say the inductor current sound like this. Goes up, here's my IL, VDS. Look like this. And then we'll look at what actually happens in the presence of this capacitance. Okay. So let's look at the drain to source current, and again, VDS. And when the FET's off, I'm gonna have zero current to begin. High blocking voltage. And at this point, suddenly the FET turns on. Okay. So assuming we have a Schottky diode up here, but there isn't any reverse recovery, we're just looking at the effect of the drain to source capacitance. What happens, right? This is an open, I suddenly just switch it over, replace it with a short. Initially, diode's conducting, but as soon as I put that short in there, I'm gonna start dropping the voltage on the switch node and reverse bias that diode relatively quickly. The diode is gonna shut off almost instantly. What I'll be left with after I turn on, really, this FET has now become a small R on in parallel with this CDS capacitance. Diode is up here, but it almost instantly shuts off. It's really dominated by the capacitance of the diode. Over here, I have my bulk output capacitance, voltage V across it. I turn that FET on, resistance begins shorting out that drain to source capacitance and discharging its energy. Same time, there's a second current loop here that is charging up this high side capacitance of the diode, allowing its voltage to go up and reverse bias this diode, decreasing the voltage across this FET by dissipating that energy through this on resistance. So what I should see, my drain to source voltage has kind of a RC decay here?
Started with an initial condition with a bunch of energy stored in CDS, and it's just dissipated by this resistance according to an RC time constant.
Dr. Smith,
yeah.
Are the labels on the left for the VD, there's two VDSs or am I misreading?
Correct.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Green in both of these plots is just neglecting this capacitance, just as reference what the ideal waveforms would look like.
Okay.
Same thing back here. This is what the inductor current would look like if switching happened instantaneously and there was no capacitance.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about the drain to source current? What do we expect it to do?
Well, if this thing suddenly switches on here, start dropping this voltage, which means this diode will become reverse biased, means it's gonna take over the full inductor current.
And if I draw IDS right here, should look pretty good, pretty close to the ideal. But what we're gonna be missing is the effect of this capacitance being there. So I'm going to draw one more thing, which we'll call ICH, or the channel current in the MOSFET.
It's IDS, but now it's inside of the CDS loop. So we'll be able to see the current from CDS.
If I sketch that ICH channel current happen, I'll actually jump up. It'll take over all the inductor current. But it's going to jump up even higher by an amount, let's say V over R on.
There's an initial voltage stored in CDS of V. And when I short that out, my current's just going to be that voltage across this resistance.
That's all the effect of shorting out that capacitance. So my current actually going through the channel is going to overshoot. And then as I discharge that capacitance, it'll decay back down.
And this comes back to the point I was making on these simulations. We see all the energy go in during the turn off. It gets short out and lost during the turn on. We don't really see that externally. It's all happening internal to the MOSFET itself. Here, I assume we had some way that we could go inside this device and measure what's actually in the channel of the transistor as opposed to through this capacitance. It's generally not possible to do. I would see this additional spike of current where I'm losing all the energy from that capacitance. Externally, I see a relatively low loss switching transition, even though internally I'm shorting out that capacitance and losing all that energy. That make sense? Okay, so here where I lose all that energy, what can I do to not lose all that energy? Looking at these two types of switching transitions, this one was relatively okay with. I form this LC resonant circuit, which is ideally lossless, and charge up the capacitance. There's a bunch of energy stored in it. By itself, it's a pretty okay thing. Resonating, a couple of ideally lossless components, energy is being transferred around, but it's all still there. This transition, I've got some RC type dynamics, shorting out of capacitance and losing all that energy. So resonance good, RC bad. If I can make this transition look more like the previous one, where I just have a resonance pulling that energy out of the capacitance, I could get it back out without high losses. Why can't I do that? Well, at the moment I just turn on the FET while this voltage is still high. If I wanted to use some sort of resonance to pull that energy out, what would I need? Need before I start doing this, the inductor current to go the other direction. Right? The inductor current was that direction. It would be pulling energy out of this capacitance, dropping the voltage without needing to short it out with the resistance.
the inductor current is small ripple, CCM, then having that negative current means power is going the other way. That doesn't help me out if I want power flow going from the input to the output. But I can have it reverse polarity for a short amount of time. And the idea would be, okay, what happens if I let the inductor current ripple go past 100%? So here's my original inductor current ripple. What happens if I had same average value, but had some gigantic ripple on it? Here's my new IL prime, some different design. Do that by dropping the inductance or dropping the switching frequency, changing the design around somewhere. But now I've got this inductor current that just has a ton of ripple. What's going to get me, though, is okay, before the FET turn on, the diode was conducting. The inductor current ripple causes it to go below zero. As soon as that inductor current hits zero, the inductor has changed polarity. When it was going to the right, it was keeping this diode on. When it hits zero and tries to go to the left, it's going to shut the diode off, right? The diode is not going to continue to conduct this negative current. The Schottky, so there's no reverse recovery charge, it'll just shut off. So here, my diode will shut off. What I'll be left with, my MOSFET hasn't turned on yet. I'm left with really just the same circuit here with this diode off. I still have my inductor, my capacitor, diode capacitance, just a different initial condition. Instead of my initial voltage being zero, it's V. Instead of my inductor current being a peak, it's zero. Plop them. What's going to happen? That zero current, got some large voltage here. Initially, V is greater than VG because it's a boost converter. The inductor current is going to have negative voltage across it, and it's going to keep going down because VG minus V over L is a negative number. And my voltage here is going to start decreasing because that negative current is pulling energy out of CDS. My voltage is going to start dropping. If I design this really well, very carefully, I can get this voltage to drop down to zero with some resonance with the inductor current. Turn on the FET right at this point where the voltage across it is already zero, so all the energy has been removed from that capacitance, and I have no switching loss associated with this capacitance. This is first type of soft switching. Look at in the course, it's called zero voltage switching. Employ some sort of a resonance to pull all the energy out of the drain to source capacitance before we turn the device on, so that when it turns on, there's no energy stored in that capacitance that we short out and lose. Okay. Then here the FET's on, we could go through the rest of the period. Have to design this thing around a much larger ripple. Look at these behaviors. And a lot of detail through the remainder of the course. Done a little bit over on time. So we'll end there, pick up with that on Wednesday. Thanks, everyone.